This is Bob Grundy in Chongqing. A short time ago, there came to the Press Hostel here in Chongqing a man with a story so unusual that even the veteran correspondent kept him busy answering questions far into the night. This man, who for the second time had escaped death from the Japs, was Don Bell, Mutual war correspondent in Manila. Bell was in Manila when the Japs entered in January of 1942, captured by the Japanese because he refused to leave his wife and two children. Bell spent 37 months in the living hell that is a Jap concentration camp. Rescued by General MacArthur's men from Santo Tomas prison camp, Bell immediately went back into action to report the war for Mutual. One day he told his family goodbye, then took off on a bombing mission to destination Shanghai. The Navy patrol bomber was shot down somewhere along the China coast. He and six of the crew members escaped, but six men died in the flaming wreckage of the bomber. But we will let Mr. Adventure himself tell his own story. Don, will you take over?
Thank you, Bob. I've always enjoyed my previous visits to China, but this visit was a little too unexpected to be exactly comfortable. Getting shot down over enemy-held territory isn't pleasant under the best of circumstances, but when the enemy starts shooting at you while you're struggling in the water, trying to get away from a burning bomber that's likely to explode at any moment, when the enemy sends out armed motorboats to try and make sure you can't get away, and then when he thinks you're about to get away in spite of his efforts, he sends up a couple of seaplanes to attempt to bomb and trace you, well, that's carrying things a bit too far for this correspondent. I've always liked to visit in China, but that was quite a reception party.
Yes, that it was. And now that you're safe here in Chongqing, after your last hectic escape from death in the depths, how do you feel?
Not exactly comfortable, because the bruises, cuts, and blisters haven't healed yet. But I'm still able to talk, and just as long as you folks back home are willing to keep on listening to me, I'm going to keep right on talking about how and why the boys from your hometown are out here exterminating Jack.
Don, tell us how you happened to get yourself into, what shall we say, this last difficulty?
Well, Bob, you could answer that question just as well as I. You see, folks, this job of telling you what your boys are doing out here is a highly competitive proposition. A war correspondent always likes to be the first one to tell you something new that's happening. Back in 1941, I was the first correspondent to give you an eyewitness description of the bombing of American territory. I was one of the first correspondents to be caught and locked up by the Japs. I was one of the first correspondents reported murdered by the Japs. And after the boys of Uncle Sam's 1st Cavalry came in and rescued me from that Manila prison camp just 2 months ago, I got right back at the business of telling you what's happening in this part of the world. So, when the 7th Fleet moved into the Philippines, and the Navy flyers of the 17th Air Wing started taking off in those new four-motored patrol bombers, the privateers, I wanted to be one of the first correspondents to fly with them, watch them work, see them sinking the Jap lifeline, and tell you about it. I wanted to be the first American correspondent to fly from the Philippines to the Jap-infested China coast. And as a result, I came very close to being the first war correspondent killed along the China coast. I'm sure I'm the first correspondent to be shot down over that coast and live to tell you about it.
Tell us how it happened, Don.
Well, we took off on our 14-hour job of looking for Jap ships to sink. We've flown around the western edge of Formosa, and the 12-man crew of our big four-motored privateer was beginning to get a bit disgusted because we couldn't find any Jap ships to sink. Other Navy flyers had been pounding that part of Japanese waters pretty heavily, and Hirohito's boats were getting few and far between. So after a few hours of looking for Jap ships that were not there to find, our pilot decided we should go on over to the China coast and see how the hunting was in that part of the world. I recall hearing him tell his co-pilot that we were changing course. On the flight deck, where I had been busy trying to keep out of everyone's way,
I saw the radio man relax.
The gunner came down out of his gun turret for a stretch. The plane captain came over to ask me if I was comforted. The plane captain felt that I was his responsibility. Well, I replied to him that I had been too busy watching the teamwork to even think about anything else. You see, it was like watching a perfect play in football. When something that looked like a target appeared below us, the pilot called the signal. Every member of the crew took post, did his particular job, well, almost by the numbers, and the net result was perfect coordination. Coordination that spelled destruction to any enemy vessel that might be anywhere near our four-motored fighter. Well, that's the name the enemy has given to this great new-style, single-tailed, improved Navy model of the B-24 or Liberator. Well, suddenly, as we were cruising along the China coast, the pilot told the crew to get set. Something was going on down there, and we were going down to have a look. Every man rushed to his boat, leaving the reporter very much alone and wondering what he could do to help. Now we flew into a little bay. Must have been a couple of miles wide. And we'd gone down to about 500 feet. We were traveling along at just under 200 miles an hour. Our bombs were ready to drop. Our machine guns were ready to belch when it happened. The Japs started shooting from the left shore. ACMAC batteries seemed to open up from all over that left shore. Our pilot pushed us into a very fast dive. The huge bomber began to weave and side flip, and as we were diving, it hit us. At about 200 feet, the pilot tried to pull out. He found that he had lost elevator control, and he couldn't pull out. We were hurtling almost straight down at over 200 miles an hour. And there wasn't a thing anyone could do to prevent that crash. Why, we didn't even have time to get set for the crank-up. Well, that's all I remembered for a while. Something hit me in the back, and I was out. The boys tell me that we bounced once. When our wounded bomber hit the second time, its nose went right down into the water and stayed there, and the plane burst into flames immediately.
Well, if you were unconscious, Don, how did you get out of the plane?
Bob, I haven't the slightest idea. But I did get out of the plane somehow, because the pilot saw my head bouncing up and down in the water a few inches from the burning wing of the plane. You see, one wing was still sticking up out of the water. Well, he could have yelled at me to get away from the plane. There were bombs down there, and the flames might explode at any moment. I explode the bombs. But no response from me. I was still out, and things were not registering. So he swam over to me. Yes, he swam over to within inches of that burning plane. He grabbed me by what was left of my tattered main mast, pulled me away from the plane, held my head out of the water so that I could breathe air instead of gasoline and salt. I began understanding things then. He was telling me to relax. Oh, I relaxed all right, but not so much because he told me to, simply because I was too far gone to do anything else but relax. Then the co-pilot swam up alongside. I heard the pilot say to him, "Here, you hang on to Mr. Bell while I go back and see if I can find a life raft." Well, I dragged a very tired arm out of the water, threw it over the co-pilot's shoulder, watched the pilot swim back once again toward that burning bar. Then he disappeared under the water. Well, it seemed an hour later that he came up. He yelled, "I found a raft." He dragged the raft over toward us, got it half inflated. I crawled into it somehow. Then they both left me. They went looking for the rest of the boys. From about 200 yards away, the aft top gunner came swimming up. He asked if I was all right. I was able to reply then that I was all right. Then he went away to help pick up the rest of the crew. A little after that, the pilot and co-pilot came back, bringing two men with them. Then the plane captain crawled into the raft, feeling very mad at himself because my Mae West hadn't worked. You see, my life jacket was his responsibility, too. So I very carefully pointed out the big hole in my Mae West, and he felt better. Well, after about 10 minutes of hell there, the seven of us who had survived the shelling, the crash, and the burning, were in the life raft.
We took stock of what we had. In the life raft, 7 of us, 1 jungle pack, 2.5 rubber paddles, 1 revolver with 6 cartridges only. Not much defense, but we were determined to fight it out if we had to.
Well, when did the Japs start shooting at you, Don?
Oh, not until we started to paddle away. I suppose the Japs thought that we had all been killed. But when we started paddling away, they saw us. And they started shooting at us. Those shells came very close, but they didn't hit us. Those exploding shells did, however, tell us which way to go. We went away from those guns as fast as 7 fagged-out, waterlogged men could push with paddles, hands, and feet. The enemy must have decided he wasn't going to hit us, because after a few minutes, the shelling stopped, and we saw 3 motorboats coming out after us. Then we really did paddle. We were getting away from those motorboats. So, up came 2 Jap planes, all set to finish us off. Well, I don't know how we did it, but we got away from those planes, too. A little later, they began bombing where they thought we were. Well, we were too busy hiding to look out and see how near those bombs came. But they didn't hit us. And finally, the planes woke up and left. Later on, the sun went down, and as soon as it was dark, we began putting miles between ourselves and the Japs. Well, anyway, now it's all over. 7 of us got into that raft and got away. 6 of us stayed behind with the planes. I only met those 6 men that morning. I know nothing of their life or their previous heroism in action, but I know the drama and the glory of their death. Those men, they knew what it was all about. They knew they were fighting to crush the Japs so that their children wouldn't have to go through the same hell all over again. They gave their last full measure of service in defense of the American way of life. As for the rest of us, well, now we're safe in friendly China. The men who are left are anxious to get back into action. They'll have a personal score to settle with some Jap gunner. As for myself, well, the pilot of that crew saved my life. The co-pilot kept me alive. The rest of the boys of that brave crew, during the tough days that followed, made me understand that life is worth living only if we can crush those forces which are trying to prevent us from living our lives as we want to live them, in freedom. I'll be returning to you in the United States soon. Then, after that, I hope to be out here again, telling you once more what your men are doing to help clean up this part of the world and make it a decent place for decent people to live in freedom.
And Don, I hope to be right here with you, reporting to the world the final defeat of Japan. And ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Don Bell, telling of his second escape from death at the hands of the Japanese. This is Bob Brumby.
And Don Bell.
Reporting to Mutual from Chongqing. And we now return you to the Mutual Broadcasting System in the United States.